Well, we understand new kids are at the Honda Center Saturday night, so disrupting a second-round series between the Flames and Ducks. So,
well, if they do go back-to-back Thursday, Friday, that's awesome. Like, I've covered series before. I remember a couple times, I think, an Ottawa-Buffalo series I did. They had to play back-to-back. It was great. Like, as a fan and a reporter, I loved it. So I wouldn't mind to see that at all.
Is that what you know about scheduling, Elliot? Is that something that they're considering long and hard here?
Well, they would think about it. I do know, like I've talked to them before, it's not ideal to play on back-to-back nights, but they would do it, especially considering both teams will have a layoff coming into it. I know the league considers that kind of thing. And also, especially when there's travel involved, if you can avoid like a 2-day off early in a series, they will try to do it.
Now, I know you're anti-Calgary. You picked Ekblad. Yes. You picked Vancouver to win this series. But I guess just your thoughts on a first-round win for the hated Flames.
Well, they deserved it. They were full marks for it. And, it's funny. On Saturday night when it was 3-0 in the first and you could tell that Daniel Sedin was kind of hurting, one of the people, I will not say who it was like, well, do you sit there and do you rest Daniel up for a game 7 because he's clearly hurting? And I remember looking at him and saying, this is not over. And obviously the first goal late in the first period, that really changed a lot of things. And, you know, it's funny, the quote I heard from someone I thought was really intelligent on the Flames was too naive to understand the pressure they should be under. And Game 6 was a perfect example of that. They had every excuse to be worried about the kind of position they were in, but they score the one goal that changes the game, and they just kept coming. And, obviously the Stajan line had a great night. The Monahan line had a great night. If you're Anaheim, you're probably confident, but you're looking at that Monahan line and saying, geez, we liked them a lot better when they had 7 points in 5 games as opposed to 10 points in game number 6. It was a really impressive victory. And, you know, the guy who probably was the most impressive was Ramo. It's not easy to come off the bench in those situations. You give up a beautiful goal on basically in the first minute you're out there. There were a lot of reasons for him to fall apart, and he was tremendous.
What did you make of the goaltending swap at the time?
You know, I'm not surprised. Like, you know, Bob Hartley has shown this year he'll do that. There have been occasions, as you guys have seen, where he will pull his goalie in the middle of the game in unconventional moments. And, the thing is that I thought in that minute, like, I've been doing a lot of research into the goaltending around the playoffs. And there was a point last week in the Western Conference where of the 8 teams playing in the playoffs, the difference in salary between the guy who played more minutes and the guy who played less minutes was about $500,000 a year. Like, when you looked at, St. Louis, the guy on the bench was making more money. In the East, Detroit, the guy on the bench is obviously making more money. In Chicago, the guy on the bench for a while before Crawford came back in to win game 6, he was making a lot more money. I think coaches, and I asked a couple coaches, like, why is this happening? And they said there's no loyalty to them, they feel, so there's no need to protect anybody. You just go out and you say, this is the guy who gives me the best chance to win tonight. And Bob Hartley felt in that moment that Hiller was not the guy who was going to win that game. So if you don't think that guy is going to win you this game, you go with your other guy and you say, okay, what's he going to be able to do tonight? And, you know, Hartley has shown this year and throughout his career, he's got big brass ones. He'll make that call and he's unafraid to do it.
Well, we saw two other series come to a conclusion. Let's start with the Wild and St. Louis. I don't know how many picked the Wild to win this one. It was, again, one of those matchups where it's a wild card team and it's a first place team.
It was the hottest team coming in and probably the team that was picked the highest to start the season, right?
Like, yeah, and this is actually one of the series I got right. I did pick Minnesota. Like I said, I don't think there's any upsets anymore. The teams are just too close together. The margin of error is for so slim. There's going to be changes in St. Louis. You know, Doug Armstrong, I think, just signed a new contract, so I don't know if he's in any trouble. But I think Hitchcock, whose contract is up, you know, probably would be. You know, the thing about St. Louis is they're not a salary cap team. They're a budget team. They do have to be careful with their finances in terms of how much they're willing to pay guys who are still under contract. And so I think that makes Hitchcock vulnerable. And I also believe there's going to be an interesting run for his services. I think you'll hear his name in Edmonton. I think you'll hear his name in Toronto as a potential candidate there. And then who else knows what opens up. But to me, like, Hitchcock is almost kind of like the easy thing. Let's blame the coach. He goes. There's going to be a roster shakeup there, and a potentially big one. You know, they're going to extend Tarasenko. He's due a new contract. And, you know, if you look at Doug Armstrong's history, he has not generally extended the forwards for a big number on their second contract. A lot of those guys, Backes, you know, Schwartz this year, they've taken bridge deals. The guys he's extended for a longer time has been his defensemen, Pietrangelo and Shattenkirk. That's going to be different this time. I wouldn't be surprised if Tarasenko gets a bigger long-term deal. I know they've been working on one. They decided to wait until after the season. They also have to deal with Schwartz next year. They have to deal with Jake Allen, although, you know, who knows how they're feeling about him today. And they also have to deal with Laterra, the center they brought over from Russia this year. So they're going to have some big decisions to make and make some big changes. I could see St. Louis potentially being interested in a guy like Kessel. I don't know if the finances are going to be able to make it easy, but I could see them thinking about making that kind of a change to their team.
Oddly enough, during the course of this season, I was curious why they would, but we heard TJ Oshie's name a lot. Do you think I don't know that they moved Steen or Backes or Stastny. They just signed Stastny to big dough, unless they can move him, I suppose. But would TJ Oshie possibly be the one guy, like you say, a forward out on the outs up front?
I think it's possible they do more than one. I you'll hear a lot of rumors there. You know, the one thing about Doug Armstrong is he's proven is he's not married to anybody. He will he will consider all sorts of things. He will be willing to listen to all sorts of things. I mean, if you look at the St. Louis Blues, I think they've won one playoff series now in 12 years. And, you know, I'll tell you another story, Dean. Like, I was at the World Juniors this year. I went out for beers with a couple of scouts and executives who were in town. And I just said, like, you know, who do you guys think is the best team in the league this year? And the answer I got the most was St. Louis. Like, they have respect. They're a good team. But whether it's if you look at the last couple of years, they've been losing to LA and Chicago in the playoffs, and those are great teams. It says to me that their mix is good, but not great. And I think you're going to see change. I think that you'll hear Oshie's name a lot. But I wonder, will they look at, now Backes, I believe, has a no-move clause, but I wouldn't be surprised if you start hearing names like that. I think St. Louis is going to have to consider a lot of things because it's obvious that their current mix is good, but it's not elite. And you reach a point where you have to say, okay, we have to try something else. And I think they're at that point.
I just think it's fascinating how many teams are in a similar situation going into this offseason.
Yeah, and you know what, Red, as you know, it's who are the angriest teams? The teams that lose in the first round. And, you know, to me, the other team that's going to be interesting is going to be Nashville. The Predators, again, they had a really good year. That division was brutal. It was the toughest division in the league. And, you know, you look at the teams that are going out in the first round, they were 100-plus point teams. Now, 100 points because of the loser point isn't quite what it used to be, but nobody's going to look at the Blues and the Predators are Stanley Cup contenders, legit. But they go out in the first round because they get tough matchups, and, you know, you're sitting there and you're saying, you know what, how can we sell the fact that we were one of the best teams in the league when we go out in the first round? And I think it leads to very tough choices, very disappointed owners. You're sitting there, and it's tough to sell to your fans when you're selling tickets next year. Hey, we were good when we go out in the first round. I agree with you, Red. I think it forces teams to be strong because you know, I think in St. Louis's case, you kind of have to say, okay, we got to change this. In Nashville's case, I'm curious to see what it means they do, because I'm still convinced they're going in the right direction. They still got a lot of really good young players, but it's tough when you lose in the first round over and over again.
Well, and we've got some clarity already on what's going to happen in San Jose, but what about Pittsburgh? Not unlike what we're seeing with the Blues in terms of you know, a lot of talent, but a team that didn't like the way their season ended.
Well, Dave Morehouse, who's the president and the CEO of the Penguins, came out on Saturday and told a couple of the reporters that they're keeping everybody. Jim Rutherford's not getting fired. Mike Johnston's not getting fired. And Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin won't be traded. Part of me wonders if that's just him getting out there to calm everybody down. I mean, they have some legit excuses. Their injuries were brutal. They were missing key defensemen, and they lost, three or four 2-1 games in the series. But, you know, to me, and you can't keep firing your coach and your general manager every year. That's what only bad, dumb franchises do. But to me, I look at this and I say, Ryan, like, You won a Stanley Cup in 2009. That's 6 years ago now. How many times have you been out of the first round since then? An embarrassingly low number of times for the talent that you have. They've been to one Eastern Conference final since, and they got wiped out by Boston. To me, if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, you have to take a good long look in a salary cap world. You don't have to do it, but you should be asking yourself the question, do we need to trade a Malkin? Do we, if we can get three good pieces for you, because you're not trading one for one. If you're trading Malkin for another guy who makes Malkin's salary, you're not solving anything. But if you can get two or three pieces, including a guy who can play with Crosby for Evgeny Malkin, don't you have to think about it? At what point do you look at it and say, you know what? Yeah, we won the Stanley Cup, but that was 6 years ago. The salary cap is flattening out. These two guys together make $18.2 million, and we keep losing in the playoffs because we don't have enough support pieces. You know, that I think if you're the Penguins, you at least have to have that conversation. And I would be shocked if they didn't at least have a serious debate about it internally.
Boy, when would be the last time there'd have been a marquee player to that level that would be traded? Because
Joel Thornton,
what's the marketplace? Because you would set it, because
the marketplace would be huge.
Yeah,
like, it would be huge. I mean, you know, the thing about, you know, I mean, and there are teams that could pull it off. Like I look around, like if you're Pittsburgh, you're asking, like I said, for three pieces, probably younger pieces. You know, Malkin has a no-move clause, so you're going to have to send him somewhere where he wants to go. I mean, geez, you know, if you guys wanted to do it, you could probably pull it off in Calgary. I mean, the question is, you know, A, would he want to go there, and B, would the Flames want to make that deal? But there, you know, I'm looking at a Florida, like a Nashville. This is just off the top of my head. I'm looking at a team with a young asset or young assets that could do this, because I just think if you're the Penguins, I'm not saying you should do it 100%, but I'm saying you really have to sit down and think about it, because you know what? It's not working there anymore under the current setup.
Game 7 tonight, Washington and the Islanders. I don't think either team is, you know, jumping off a bridge if they lose this one, but is the greater pressure obviously on the Capitals here?
I do. I think so. They're at home. They made some big changes this year. And you know what? The Islanders are really beaten up, especially on the blue line. I would agree with you. I think the greater pressure is on Washington. That's been a hell of a series, though. I mean, just great, great hockey. Honestly, I think either team against the Rangers would be a heck of a series. The Islanders for obvious reasons, and Washington because I think they're a heck of a team. To me, though, I think the greater pressure tonight is on Tampa. They go out first round 4-0 last year and 4-2 this year. If they lose tonight, that's a real disappointment. I think also there's something weird going on there with Steven Stamkos. Like, He's not on the. They're not using his power play unit first now. And there was one time where he was on a shift right before the power play, but there's been a couple of other times where he's been on like two shifts before the power play, and they throw the second unit out there first. You know, there you could see Nick had a great shot the other night in Game 5 of, you know, they're down going into the third period and Stamkos isn't on the ice for the faceoff, and our camera crew did a great job of taking a shot at him on the bench, and you could see he was just mad about it. And there's something weird going on there. It's clear that he's a little frustrated, and I don't know if he feels he's not being used properly or the coach trusts his AHL guys that he knows a bit more than Stamkos or what's going on there, but it's just something. The wires are crossed there somehow.
And that would be another catastrophic end, because they were a top team in the regular season a year ago, didn't make it out of round one, and this would be back-to-back years.
And you know what, Dean, they're sitting there, they beat Montreal, they swept Montreal this year, and they really gave Montreal a lot of fits. They'd be looking at that and saying, how much do we regret not getting another shot at these guys?
Yeah. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you later in the week. Enjoy Game 7, and we'll be ready to talk Ducks and Flames with you next time.
All right, guys. Have a great week.